Good morning. I'd like to call to order the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Michelle, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard.
Here.
Representative Barrero. Representative Dugan.
Present.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fisher. Gilombardo.
Here.
Ranking Member Golf Marcel, excused. Henson.
Here.
Hunchowski.
Here.
Jennings.
Here.
Killebrew. Overdorf.
Yes, ma'am.
Robinson, excused. Sabatini. Quorum is present.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure your cell phones or any sound-making devices are turned to silent. And we will begin. We have a good morning prepared for our meeting today. We will cover two topics of importance to our subcommittee. First, we have a presentation by Melinda Miguel, Chief Inspector General on Cybersecurity. She is doing work with training and leading the risk assessment efforts across the state government, and also serves on the State Cybersecurity Advisory Council. Secondly, we will hear from the Acting State Purchasing Director, Cliff Nelson, who will provide us an overview of state purchasing and update us on the implementation of legislation passed last year, House Bill 1079. Which was passed to enhance our procurement laws. And with that, I would like to welcome Melinda Miguel, our Chief Inspector General. She has held this position now under three governors and has a wealth of information and experience to share with you today. Ms. Miguel, welcome to our committee. You are recognized.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I sure appreciate the opportunity. It's my honor to be here today. And I thank everyone for your interest in this important topic. We've got a couple of things that we want to cover this morning that appear on this slide, basically to summarize the implementation of House Bill 1297 regarding cybersecurity from an inspector general and internal auditing perspective. Also to provide an update on the audit of continuous security monitoring of state agencies, and to provide an update on the enterprise cybersecurity resiliency funding for the agency inspectors general that was put in the CIO's budget, the Chief Information Officer's budget and DMS within the GR fund. I'm excited and thrilled to be here, so thank you, Madam Chair. A little overview as it relates to House Bill 1297. It passed in the 2021 legislative session. It establishes a Florida Cybersecurity Advisory Council, of which I'm a member, and that is being chaired by Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez. The House Bill 1297 provides certain details and requirements for not only the agency inspectors general, but also for Florida Digital Service, which is located and housed within the Department of Management Services. It sets forth that the Florida Digital will be the lead agency responsible for establishing standards and processes for assessing state agency cyber risks and determining appropriate security measures. The new law also adopts and enables Florida Digital to adopt those rules to mitigate risk and safeguard agency digital assets. It also provides for provision to support a security governance framework. The law also directs specifically the inspectors general to include a specific cybersecurity audit plan in the development of our audit, annual audit plans through our risk assessment process. Our risk assessment process is unique to the agency inspectors general. The operational side for cybersecurity within the agencies also has a risk assessment function that they must perform every 3 years. So our process does not duplicate theirs, it enhances theirs. In implementing the House Bill 1297, we anticipated that this was going to pass with flying colors in July of this year. So we went ahead and assembled a working group of agency inspectors general and their audit directors to begin preparation for the passage of this bill. We did this proactively, knowing that this was the right thing to do, and to conduct an initial risk assessment from an audit perspective based upon available historical information. And I'm going to go into that in a little bit more detail. We also wanted to determine a scope of the audit across the agencies so that we could leverage the power of the agency inspectors general auditing resources in-house. We initiated a cybersecurity enterprise audit across those agencies that addressed certain cybersecurity components, and I will talk about those in greater detail as well. This specifically includes the governor's agencies, but those governor and cabinet agencies or others are welcome to opt in, and we're excited to participate with those cabinet agencies as well. So going a little bit deeper, I want to talk a little bit about the risk assessment process and the audit planning process that the Inspectors General Working Group performed. Of course, we started with the governing directives. So with the new 282.318, we also relied upon the existing rule. Important to note is that the existing rule also incorporates the NIST framework. Statutes makes reference to this NIST framework as well that the agencies must follow. We embrace that particular framework to guide our process throughout so that we would be in lockstep with the expectations of the legislature. We reviewed certain relevant documents. We evaluated certain internal and external audits, including the audits that were conducted by the Legislative Auditor General. We looked at certain audit coverage, specifically what was planned in the upcoming year, but we also did a retrospective look where we could look and see where we might have gaps in audit coverage. And there were several gaps. We evaluated our available staffing, our current staffing in-house, and the maturity of the agency inspectors general and our audit teams internally. We also anticipated that there would be some gaps in our education and training right off the bat, because even though we've had a mandate to hire IT resources, we often struggle with maintaining those IT resources because once they're certified, sometimes they do leave and they get a greater salary from the private sector, oftentimes is at least twice as much as what we can pay for at the state. We did consider available options for conducting our audit and our risk assessment. We did look at whether we could contract out, whether we could do some sort of staff augmentation, and we also looked at training our in-house internal resources to make this more repeatable and an iterative process within the existing funding. We opted to enhance and build upon our current internal team. We also reviewed certain relevant reports. Specific two that I want you to focus on specifically are the 2020 risk assessments that were submitted by the agencies to Department of Management Services, and also the agency strategic operation plans also submitted to DMS. The ASOC, as we referred to that particular one, was last dated in 2019. Those two documents, along with the next one that you see on the slide, which is the Cybersecurity Task Force report, making three documents, those are exempt from public consumption. We used the Chief Inspector General's authorization under current law to enable this working group to look at those documents through the authority that the legislature granted the Chief Inspector General. So thank you for that. These risk assessments that were completed across the agencies was a requirement under the former organization, the former AST. Those have not changed yet, but it provided us a lot of valuable information. And we also considered input from the agency inspectors general based upon their risk assessments that they conduct each year in building their audit plans. Let me take you a little bit deeper into the risk assessment framework. I mentioned that Rule 60GG2 adopts this framework, the NIST framework, the National Institute of Standards and Technology for Improving Critical Infrastructure Cybersecurity. This is a public document that is used in training all sorts of cyber professionals and auditors. And I thought it was a good visual because you get to see the five domains that NIST focuses on and then the subcategories under each of those domains. it provides a perfect pictorial to kind of see some of the issues that we had to choose from in building our audit plan for this coming cycle. You can tell that we would want to cover all of these categories through a cycle. We would want to make sure that all areas are robust and mature. However, we ended up picking a particular function, and I'll show you a little bit more detail even further. If you look here, this is breaking out that detect category, which was one of the ones on the prior slide. And now you can even see the subcategories. Again, this is a public document, so you would be able to find this if you wanted to Google back at your offices on what the NIST framework looks like, or if you wanted more information on the security continuous monitoring. Based upon the rigorous evaluation of all of the available historical information and then looking at the judgment of the inspectors general based upon their risk assessments, we decided that security continuous monitoring was the area that we wanted to provide focus. So this is the exact area that you can see those eight domains: monitoring the network, monitoring the physical environment, monitoring personnel activity, malicious code, and unauthorized malicious code, et cetera, performing vulnerability scans. Those are the areas that we plan to test. Here is a summary document actually telling you precisely what the scope of the audit of the agency inspectors general and the chief IG will include. The scope of this audit includes current agency cybersecurity continuous monitoring policies, procedures, activities, and processes. I highlighted a couple of those key activities. Those are pulled directly from that chart, and you can see that we're doing and following it exactly based upon the NIST framework. And we will be testing each of these subcategories in greater detail so that we can provide you a report at the end of our cycle that will evaluate each state agency based upon their abilities and their current state of compliance on these activities. So for enterprise audit preparation, not an easy feat, but what we wanted to do is make sure that we were all doing the same or similar activities using the same audit program so that we could assimilate the results easily for a body such as yourself to dissect and evaluate once our report is finalized. So we could feed you information from at least the 18 to 35 agencies in a way that was standardized to the best of our ability. Understanding that each agency varies in size and scope and number of resources and even their mission. So to the best of our ability, we're sort of leveling the playing field so that we're evaluating all agencies across this framework. And that way we can assimilate some information for you so that it'll be easy to understand. And it will be all 18 agencies plus will be in a format that will be understandable and easily comparable across that playing field. So we created and distributed audit guidance from the Chief Inspector General's office based upon input from this working group. We then conducted three-day training for the Inspector General audit staff using in-house resources. We had eight certified information systems auditors that we were able to pull together to build this training. Not all of those people were trained in training, but to watch this group come together and the synergy that they created to drill down on these eight modules that they're going to be auditing this cycle was truly an inspiration to watch them and the synergy they created to talk about the evidence that's required for the audit, what type of interview questions that we need to ask, what type of evidence is going to be necessary in order for us to rely upon that information so that we can submit some information back to you, providing reasonable assurance that we're covering each of these audit elements. We also created a report template so that it would all be reported in a similar fashion, and the audit fieldwork is currently underway. One of the things that we thought was extremely important was taking that framework and that audit program in accordance with that NIST framework. And we provided that audit program directly to each agency's chief information officer and information security manager. We also provided it to the state CIO and his team. We wanted to be absolutely clear that this is not a gotcha exercise. This is a baseline activity. We are attempting to work with them in the transparency within the environment that we are able, given the fact that we can't share certain information outside of the agency, like our findings, without going through a legal review and in accordance with statute. But we wanted to signal to the chief information officers and the agency heads that are being audited this cycle that this is exactly what to expect from us. This is exactly the plan that we plan to follow. And these are the exact topics, almost as an opportunity for them to self-assess and see if there's areas for further priority that need to be considered in upcoming years. This particular audit will be concluded by spring of 2022. At the end of the audit, the agency management team, including their chief information officers and the agency heads, will be given 20 days to respond to our draft findings, and their responses will be incorporated into our final report. One of the things that we also were doing during this cycle was submitting an operational work plan and the spending plan to the legislature as it relates to the $1 million that we are receiving for enhanced agency inspector general resources and resiliency for cyber. Our planned reports for this audit, or these audits, I should say, because each of the agency IGs are going to issue individual audits by their agency so that you will get a picture at the conclusion of the audit of exactly what each agency's status is of compliance with this particular audit framework. The Chief Inspector General will then issue a roll-up report of common enterprise-wide issues and concerns so that will be easily digestible for policymakers such as yourselves and folks within the governor's office. The Chief IG will also submit quarterly reports on our $1 million appropriation received for the training, and our first report is due January 2022. We look forward to presenting that information to this body so that we can report out on the progress that we are making. Let me talk a little bit about that, some of the recommendations and the genesis for that funding. The Cybersecurity Task Force was published and issued on February 1st, 2022, and included certain recommendations for improvement related to cybersecurity for state agencies. Included also were some recommendations regarding auditing cybersecurity. In order for us to determine whether we could build an iterative process for this $1 million, because this was a non-recurring pot of money for agency inspectors general auditing resources, we were attempting to try to figure out a way that we could best build on a repeatable rinse, wash, repeat kind of iterative process so that we could take existing resources, invest in those existing resources so that in out years they will continue to build on that knowledge base and continue to teach one another and build a synergy within in-house resources. We did submit that operational work plan. Right now, we have two RFQs issued on the streets for two of those trainings, and a third one will be hitting the streets this afternoon with the help of our colleagues over at the Department of Management Services. Thank you, sirs. The training plan, that's so important to invest in this existing cadre of workforce, is to develop that initial training plan for inspectors general, for auditors, and we also have an investigative component, but we needed to build on their base level of knowledge. Typically, when there's incidences and or breaches and it involves a report to the chief information officer, typically those kinds of issues are referred to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement in accordance with statute, and their cyber crime unit engages and is equipped to investigate those criminal activities from a law enforcement perspective. It remains exactly to be seen the new protocols that will be coming through that process, but we envision that the inspectors general will play a role because the inspectors general have played a role in the CSERTs in the agencies already. So those CSERTs, sorry, I use another acronym, is the incident response teams. When there's a breach or a potential suspected incident that occurs in an agency, Typically, those response teams include the general counsel, the CIO, the ISM, the inspector general, and maybe others. So we're looking forward to kind of rounding out our training on this particular first round of investment. The training must be finalized by June 30. We are doing just more than the governor's agencies. We've also included the governor's agencies, the cabinet agencies, the governor cabinet agencies, the courts, public service commission, and so we've done a broad swath to make this investment across the statewide infrastructure. Part of the training plan is that the selected auditors within the offices of inspectors general will undergo a minimum of a 2-day training in the fundamentals of cybersecurity. Selected investigators will also undergo a 2-day fundamental training. There's also another training that we are working on with the FBI that is a boot camp for cybersecurity that we plan to send all of the agency resources, IG resources, through as well. So we are super excited about this opportunity to upskill and fill in any talent gaps. To build on that 2-day training, though, because oftentimes these individuals, like an audit director or an inspector general, may already be a certified information systems auditor. That is an extremely valuable training that we are seeking to provide for an estimated 70 attendees. The certification is accredited. It does require the staff to pass rigorous exam and have certain experience in the field. So those more senior staff within the audit component, either senior director, audit director, or other senior staff, can opt in for this particular, well, I say opt in, it's more mandatory, ma'am, but so CISA certification will be something that each of those senior folks in the offices of inspectors general will have at the end of the day by June 30th of 2022. Every inspector general will also be a CISA or a certified governance in enterprise information technology certificate. This is also offered by ISACA, and it is a certification that's internationally recognized as well as accredited, and the staff have to pass a rigorous exam. And generally, these staff also already have to have 5 years of experience in auditing cybersecurity or some involvement with oversight and governance with in an inspector general role. There's another estimated 70 attendees that will be certified at the end of the fiscal year, and we're super excited about that opportunity. So our first two, our CISA, Certified Information Systems Auditor, and our CGITE, Certified Government Enterprise Information Technology Certification Procurements, were posted on November the 19th. The purchases are expected very, very soon. We are going to begin the procurements or the release and registration and evaluation for the CISA and the CGITE for this first round of both inspectors general and senior auditors and or audit directors. We're going to go ahead and get them enrolled so they can begin studying, and they will attend a one-week deep dive class on auditing cybersecurity from a NIST framework perspective as issued or as supported by ISACA. The remaining procurements will be released in December and January for full completion by June 30th. And we have one more procurement that's going out this afternoon for our third training. And that third training is the one that I mentioned, that's the fundamentals class for the more entry-level teams that need that baseline training. So we're super thrilled to report out on the support and the progress that the Inspector General community has made. And my timeline, I think I've already covered, but let me just summarize briefly the kinds of topics that will be covered in our fundamentals of cybersecurity training for the audit directors and the senior staff. They will be able to recognize and measure effectiveness within a cybersecurity program. They will be able to understand the importance of information security governance. They will be able to receive training, information training on cybersecurity and risk assessments, and especially from a vendor perspective. Our third-party supply chain risks will be included in the training that they are receiving. They will also be able to explore certain auditing considerations for cybersecurity-related compliance. They will recognize typical cybersecurity-related directive, preventative, detective, corrective, mitigating, redundant, compensating, and corrective internal controls. So it'll be able to build upon their already deep information and knowledge that they possess, but it really does a deep dive on the internal controls piece of this so that our auditors will have cutting edge, up to the minute information on what those internal controls look like, what they should look like, are they there, and how to assess compliance with those controls. Also, they will be able to review state-of-the-art auditing techniques to assess cyber resiliency within existing operational audit programs and focus also on things like payroll systems, My Florida Marketplace, communication systems, driver's license systems, other kinds of eligibility sort of systems to ensure that they have the right controls to protect these systems from any cybersecurity attacks. So super excited again, and thank you for the opportunity to report out on the progress. Look forward to keeping you posted on that. Lastly, as I come to a close, I want to just briefly mention and review the Cybersecurity Advisory Council. I mentioned the task force report early on that was a point of consideration when we were building our audit plan. The Cybersecurity Advisory Council was in House Bill 1297. It is a brand new advisory council. It's met already once this year so far. It is something that an organization that needs to meet quarterly based upon the statutory guidance. There are other important appointments to this council from key sectors within our energy sectors, for instance, water sector. There's other appointments, including the DMS secretary is an ex officio member. Also, the chief information officer, the chief information security officer, FDLE cybercrime representatives, and the chief inspector general are members as outlined by that legislation. And our lieutenant governor is the chair. I'm excited to play a part of that advisory council, but just as a point, I serve as an advisor. I am prohibited from making policy or setting or taking on operational duties. Based upon my auditing and investigative role as Chief Inspector General. So I have to be very careful that I am sticking to the mandates outlined in legislation and don't cause any impairments to my independence to audit or investigate cybersecurity issues. So I enjoy this topic. It's become my new passion over the last decade, and I'm excited to be a part of this advisory council to make history for the state of Florida. I thank the members of this committee for your vision on the bill and any future legislation and policy that this body creates. I'm super excited to be a part of that history making in Florida. This is such an important issue, as you know. With that, Madam Chair, let me just touch finally, these are the summary of what we've covered today on the implementation of 1297, update of our audit, and an update on our training and $1 million appropriation, of which I'm so grateful. And I'm willing to entertain any questions. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. I really appreciated your presentation, and I'm gonna turn to my members to see if there's any questions for the Chief Inspector. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just had a couple questions, if that's okay, ma'am. First of all, thank you so much for just a great presentation today and how you handled it, et cetera, the information that you gave us. Small item, and just because I tend to pick up on details, on your timeline slide, you had purchases happening on 11/19/22 and then talking about June of 22 as a follow-up. So I think you meant 21.
I did. Thank you so very much.
Both of those dates, both December and the November date.
That is correct.
Okay.
Both of those are 2021. Yes, okay. Sir. We have a tight timeline and happy to deliver.
Thank you so much for that. Recently in Martin County, we had a small issue with our tax collector, and it has been very tight-lipped, shall we say, what has been happening there. And the cyber incident that they had in that office, we still don't know if any data was actually compromised. We have no idea if, in fact, there were issues there. Had some great interaction with the CIO, who has been extremely helpful, but until very recently, there wasn't even a ticket entered by this by the county facility down there. I bring it up because not only is this you're creating a fence around our cybersecurity efforts here within the state, but obviously the folks that are nefarious are going to be looking at the weakest link possible. And knowing that many of our local agencies have a line directly into the state system, it worries me. And this is an area that is, they're still having problems with fast titles. They're still having problems with information that would be coming directly from the state. So I guess there's two questions here. Number one, have you heard from Martin County or anyone in your staff, possibly, about the cyber event? And then number two, how could you possibly address 66 different ports of entry, shall we say, into the state system? And do you have enough resources for that, and how can we help?
You're recognized.
Thank you. I think your concerns are extremely valid. Your question is very deep, and I'd like to ponder your question so that I could be very meticulous in my response, because that's an invitation to a very real conversation that I would like to follow up further through the chair, if I may. There's some operational components to what you're talking about from a chief information officer perspective. There's also the auditing, investigative, oversight, governance kind of perspective that I think needs to be included. So I think a holistic approach is going to be extremely important. I think also it's going to be extremely important for there to be a collaborative approach across government in order to understand and fully put our arms around the degree level of risk that we are facing together. I would like to reflect very carefully on what you asked in greater detail and provide maybe through our governor's office staff a detailed response on that precise answer, because it's a multifaceted answer, and I can't thank you enough for the question, though, and the expression of support. No, we do not have enough resources from an auditing perspective to consider the 67 counties. Not every county has an inspector general. Not every county has an internal auditor. Everyone's roles are different. I think it's important for us to look at this across the whole enterprise in order to get an answer for you. Thank you for your question.
Thank you. I think you answered that really well, because as you did your discussion, I was thinking it really is all of our devices, all the businesses, and the different layers of government. This is, because we're so interactive, it's more and more important that we all engage on this subject to make our systems more secure.
Yes, ma'am.
So I think it's the first step of a fairly long road. You have another question, Representative Overdorf?
Just one final, and that would be that as you're looking at this, if you could please also look with the constitutional officers, if they are not communicating, if there is an opportunity to be able to step in and allow for the public to understand what is happening, there may be an opportunity there for you all to step in at some point, because there's a lot of citizens in Martin County that are still wondering if their information is safe and if, in fact, there's anything else they can be doing at this moment in time. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you.
I see no other question. Oh, Representative Hinson, you're recognized. Absolutely.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the presentation and for the work you've done to set up your auditing model. I do have one question. I can see that it was set up based on national standards. My question is, did you reach out to other municipalities here in the state or even across the states and some entities, kind of like Martin County, that have already been breached? Some have been held hostage. Some have been blackmailed. There's a lot of information we could probably learn from what they saw or what kinds of problems reveal themselves to them that we might be able to use in this model. Were you able to talk to some of the other municipalities?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we have reached out. I am the national president-elect for the Association of Government Accountants. Cybersecurity is a fundamental project and program that is touching so much of our government operations that it is going to require a collaborative approach from not only finance and accounting, procurement, legal, information technology. It's not just a back office function anymore. Cybersecurity is everyone's business, and particularly a collaborative approach with the C-suite, those individuals in the leadership, is going to be imperative. Part of my role with the Association of Government Accountants, I serve on a partnership of 17 members of high-ranking folks from the federal, state, and local government. And cybersecurity is an area of focus for this intergovernmental partnership on a national level. And I am honored enough to serve and have a seat at the table during this discussion. We are in regular conversations. We meet monthly. We are talking with large federal agencies such as the GSA, Department of Defense. On our last couple of calls, we've also heard from a very integral role played by the Government Accountability Office under the U.S. Comptroller General. In addition to those activities, I also have had a unique opportunity with the Manatee County. Byron Shin was a task force member of the Cybersecurity Task Force, and he is the auditor, the external CPA firm that's been hired by Manatee County. And Manatee County, both the clerk's office and the county administrator, invited me to their city, their county, to explore partnership opportunities. We've had detailed conversations with them about how to leverage this across the state. One key component of that, the clerk for Manatee County, is a dear personal friend of the clerk in Martin County that our dear colleague in the back row here mentioned just a minute ago. Angel is the president of the Clerks of Court Association. She has invited me to a local government symposium in March to talk about a cybersecurity summit that she has planned across local government from auditing inspector general perspectives and an accountability perspective. So yes, and we will continue that and embrace that. And thank you so very much for your question.
Thank you. Certainly a timely topic and an important one. Internal controls have always been senior management's responsibility, and I think sometimes it's lost on governing bodies and in the top-level decision makers. So it's excellent that this is being brought to their attention, because this is another layer of, you know, the power of computers also makes the opportunity for vulnerabilities that we need to close up. And I really appreciate you being here with us and the hard work ahead. I know it's not going to be a perfect road. We've had some pretty big challenges that have made headline news that have affected governments throughout the country.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's good to hear that there's the effort to go from the federal level all the way down to the local governments, because they're all important. I really appreciate the good questions from my members. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just a small clarification. Just wanted to make sure that you understood it was the tax collector, not Carolyn Timmon, the clerk of court.
Yes, I understood.
Does a great job.
Yes, I understood.
Okay,
yeah, maybe I could have been more clear. Thank you.
Okay.
Can I have one follow-up?
And a follow-up from Representative Henson.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So I was wondering, with your public records exemption aspects, how many issues would we as legislators be able to hear about, talk about, and help you resolve?
You want to tackle that one?
I can attempt. That is an excellent question of which I don't have a thorough understanding and answer for, but go ahead.
So one of the problems is if you tell people exactly what you're doing, they know exactly how to defeat them. So a lot of these things are shaded, and we're kind of in the beginnings of these. And so it's an interesting
balance.
An interesting balance to negotiate. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so really appreciate you being here, and
yes, ma'am,
that you got a lot of good work ahead.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. All right. Next up, we have Cliff Nelson, the state's acting chief procurement officer and director of state. Wait a minute, I got that backwards, didn't I? Okay. And director of state purchasing. He has many years of state government experiences and has just recently been elevated to this position, beginning to take these new responsibilities. Mr. Nelson, welcome to our committee. You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I am Cliff Nelson, and I'm deputy director now and acting on behalf of Roz Ingram for the moment for the Division of State Purchasing, Department of Management Services. I have been with the department since 2010 and have served as the deputy director since 2015. We really appreciate the opportunity to present before you today and give you a glimpse into the great work that the Division of State Purchasing does for the state of Florida. Today, we'll cover three topics. First, we'll provide an overview of state purchasing and what we do. We'll then provide an update on the progress of the My Florida Marketplace Next Generation implementation. And finally, we'll provide an update on House Bill 1079 and our implementation of those provisions. Let's jump right in. On this slide, you'll see that the division is divided into six program areas. The first three bureaus are responsible for procuring contracts and adopting statewide agreements and managing those agreements through their relationships with vendors and agency customers. Next, My Florida Marketplace team, commonly referred to as MFMP, oversees the service provider that implemented and manages the state's e-procurement system. Next, our governance and professional development team is responsible for creating and delivering training of agency personnel and also provides contract guidance to agencies upon request. Finally, our Office of Supplier Diversity engages with Florida-based women, veteran, and minority-owned small businesses to assist them in obtaining state and government business. Let's dive a little deeper into the numbers. The Division of State Purchasing has 64 statewide agreements, 709 vendor contracts, and 24 insurance contracts. Our Bureau of Professional Development operates 4 training courses, 3 certification programs, and currently monitors 5,265 active certifications. Over the last 5 fiscal years, MFMP has processed an average of $3.8 billion in purchase orders. That's an annual number, an annual average. And finally, the Office of Supplier Diversity has certified nearly 1,500 women, veteran, and minority businesses during fiscal year 2021. And during fiscal year 1920, the state spent $597 million with certified businesses. This slide shows you an overview of our budget, which I must add is fully funded by trust fund dollars. Our nearly $18 million budget is funded through fees collected by the use of our electronic procurement systems and information systems, including My Florida Marketplace. The fee is set by statute and rule and is currently 1% for fiscal year 21-22. As you can see from the chart, over half of our budget is to manage the My Florida Marketplace system. A quarter of our budget goes to pay the salaries and benefits of our 55 staff members. About 8% of our budget goes to the Department of Financial Services, who is a partner with us in purchasing and payment processing. And nearly $500,000 supports the Office of Supplier Diversity. The remaining budget supports professional training, normal operating expenses, data processing services, and other items that allow our team to operate. A few numbers regarding our My Florida Marketplace system, and later on I'll give you an update on the next generation system. Right now I'm talking about the existing system. My Florida Marketplace is the state of Florida's e-procurement system and has been in operation for over 15 years. The system provides tools to support innovative procurement and allows for the centralizing and streamlining of purchases and interaction between governments and vendors. The system allows users to access and buy from statewide agreements for services, products, licenses, and other essential items. The system also allows users to get quotes from vendors for products and services. The statistics on this slide paint a picture of a robust and essential system that has processed over 2.8 million purchase orders and over 37,000 contracts since its inception in 2003. The system currently has close to 100,000 registered vendors and nearly 25,000 users. Moving from My Florida Marketplace, this slide provides an overview of one of our department's most successful programs. The Bureau of Professional Development provides first-in-class training to contract professionals throughout state government, allowing dollars to be spent efficiently and empowering state government to negotiate the best rates for Florida taxpayers. These certifications have been proven to work. In fact, within 3 years of implementing the training, Florida's contract efficiency rate went from 42% to 20%, and today sits at roughly 6%. It's my understanding that that was the legislator's intent when they created the Florida Certified Contract Manager Program, and it's been very successful. As we round out the overview of state purchasing, I want to be sure to take time to highlight our Office of Supplier Diversity. This office was established in 1985 with the goal of improving business opportunities for Florida-based women, veteran, and minority-owned businesses. One of the core functions of this office is to maintain the certification process and maintain an online directory of certified businesses. Here we highlight some of the great work that the office has done this year. They've hosted two supplier diversity exchanges. In these exchanges, businesses get training on how to do business with the state, bid on procurements, and ask relevant questions. They're actually able to meet with government officials and folks doing purchasing and learn about the purchasing process. This year, we have certified and recertified 3,600 businesses, and we now boast a directory of over 7,000 certified Florida-based women, veteran, and minority-owned small businesses. We've also continued growing our partnerships and provided boot camps and workshops with groups such as the Small Business Development Council and the Procurement Technical Assistance Center. Over the next few slides, I'll provide you with an update on the implementation of the next generation of My Florida Marketplace. As technology is continuously leveraged to provide enhanced services to state agency customers and ultimately the citizens of Florida, an efficient and scalable marketplace platform plays a critical role in ensuring that agencies can acquire the commodities and services they need. My Flora Marketplace was originally created in 2003, and it has been a tremendous resource for the state. Since fiscal year 2018-19, the legislature has made significant investments into the next generation system. I'm happy to say that on July 1st of this year, the contract was executed and the system is scheduled to go live in July of 2022, which is only 7 months away. The investment in the next generation My Florida Marketplace platform will enhance the user interface and further centralize the state's procurement systems. The system will be hosted in a cloud-based, secure environment and provide business analytics tools along with an integrated vendor bid system and Office of Supplier Diversity functionality. The new system consolidates our existing platform into three robust applications. You see those listed on your slide: the Vendor Information Portal, Ariba On Demand, and Tableau. On this side, you see our timeline implementation. You'll notice that the first milestone has already been accomplished. But I'd like to draw your attention to March 2022 and July 2022. These are the places where the vendors and the agency customers will be online on the system and using the system. The My Flora Marketplace system will also be one of the numerous enterprise-wide systems that will be integrated into the new Palm system, which, as you know, is replacing Florida's current accounting system called FLAIR. In accordance with the Palm schedule, the transition is set to happen in July 2024. Since this is an appropriations committee, I would be remiss if I did not bring up our appropriations request for $5.8 million in trust fund authority to provide a transition window for the first half of 2022-23. Now for our third topic, I'd like to provide you an update from the 2021 legislative session, specifically House Bill 1079, titled Agency Contracts for Commodities and Contractual Services, which was sponsored by Representative Mariano and signed into law by Governor DeSantis. The first significant change in the bill increases the level of competition for vendors by directing agencies to have a larger pool of vendors to contemplate when purchasing contracted services. Our team is currently making enhancements to the existing My Florida Marketplace so that these necessary quotes are automatically generated on the contracts for which they're required. Another portion of the bill, which also may increase competition, extends the time required for posting of single sources from 7 business days to 15 business days. The bill also includes language regarding quarterly reports from agencies that must be submitted to DMS, and then DMS will be reporting them to the governor and the House and the Senate. Additionally, the bill prohibits solicitations by agencies if they do not have the proper budget or appropriation or statutory authority. On this slide, you can see that the bill created oversight teams for consistency and monitoring and reporting contract compliance. Agencies have been monitoring and reporting contract compliances in their normal business already, but this bill provides a consistent way of overseeing larger contract services in excess of $5 million, $10 million, and $20 million. The transparency is also enhanced by the reporting requirement. The oversight team must notify in writing the agency head, DMS, that's Department of Management Services, OPB, Office of Planning and Budget, and the Legislative Appropriations Committees of any significant change in contract scope or any increase in cost greater than 5% of the planned cost of contractual service contracts of $10 million or greater. Sorry, I was on the wrong slide. Apologize. Okay. The next area that provides additional accountability are the sections dealing with contract managers and contract management generally, and the training. The bill strengthens the requirements for Florida-certified contract managers and Florida-certified contract negotiators and establishes certification for FCCN, which are contract negotiators, requires all curriculum to be reviewed and updated every 5 years. This section directs contract managers to monitor their contracts in a manner that provides consistency throughout the enterprise. Additionally, each contract manager who is responsible for contracts in excess of $10 million must possess at least 5 years of experience in managing contracts in excess of $5 million. An individual may not serve as both the contract manager and contract administrator for contracts in excess of $500,000. This is so there can be a separation of duties, which is a good thing. Accountability is also enhanced by the newest training required under this bill. This training is applicable to anyone who supervises contract managers or grant managers, and this training must be completed annually and within 12 months of someone being appointed to a supervisory position. Our team is working on this training right now. It will be delivered online using the People First Learning Management System and given to appropriate parties as directed by each agency. All of this training will be consistent with the content in the contract management, contract negotiator, and other procurement training delivered by the department. Our last slide. Our last slide shares additional implementation steps related to 1079 that we are in the process of doing. We are in the process of amending our rules, including the rule related to suspended vendors. Additionally, we're launching trainings for supervisors in the People First Learning Management System that I just mentioned. We'll have that in place by July 1, 2022. And as mentioned earlier, we've created an online process and report for agencies to report single source purchasing. We'll continue to partner with agencies and build out their oversight teams and reporting procedures. Thank you for the opportunity to present to the committee this morning, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to entertain any questions that you or the members have.
I don't see any questions. I very much appreciate it. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of these things at some point.
Sure.
Procurement's a really important part of the, you know, the government's stewardship over
absolutely
financial resources and making sure people get, the people of Florida get, the services that they need through those through our appropriations process. I really appreciate you being here to update us today with some a good overview of what you are doing in your implementation and the progress you're making on the, I have to look at it to say it, the people, My Florida Marketplace. Oh, that one, there's so many acronyms. Somebody's going to have to get me a big list of them.
We're really excited about all the things that we're working on, and I come from a policy background, and so I consider purchasing to be crucial to implementing legislative policy, so we appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Very good. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being here with us today,
and
wish you continued success.
Thank you, ma'am.
Members, that brings us to the close of our agenda, and I want to say I'm really grateful for Representative Maggard, my vice chair, to be with us, and I think briefly we had, there, Representative Sabatini joined us as well. Good to see you, Representative Sabatini. This concludes our committee agenda. I wish you very nice holidays and a nice break. I know that you'll all be working hard on issues as we're getting ready to come back in January, but I hope you have a lot of fun and good times with your family and friends, and enjoy all those good things that we enjoy at the holidays. Thank you very much. I appreciate all the staff's hard work and hope you get some time with your families as well. This concludes our committee agenda. Seeing no further business before the committee, Representative Maggard, my vice chair, moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.